Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. For most of us, living a long, fulfilling life is something most of us would like to do, but living a long time has drawbacks because sometimes the final months or years can be difficult, requiring long-term care because of illness or disability. Most people over the age of 65 will need it. It's care that should be planned for well before the need arises. How and why is the subject of this segment. Joining me in studio is Mary Lynn Fonda Donovan, Executive Director of Voice. Voice is a nonprofit agency that educates individuals and their families on choices for long-term care. It's hosting a conference here later this week, which we'll talk about later. Tim Proche, author of The Other Talk, a guide for having that care conversation with adult kids, joins us by phone. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having us today.
Thank you, Don.
Mary Lynn, let's start with you. I think a lot of people might not be confused as to exactly what long-term care is, thinking, oh, well, they're going to talk about nursing homes. It's more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Our mission is to really help individuals and families for quality living across the whole continuum of long-term care. And continuum really starts with remaining independent in your home, but getting some services to keep you independent, such as home care services. Could be medical or non-medical, like helping, you know, paying bills or running errands, all the way to finding maybe adult day services to put your loved one in during the day, all the way to assisted living and then skilled nursing. So it's that whole continuum. Thanks to kind of an explosion of long-term care options over the last decade, families have a lot of different options for caring for somebody with long-term care needs.
That's not the only explosion. There's a population explosion, 77 million baby boomers, right, falling right into that category.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest issues is very few of them are actually planning for long-term care.
Right. Can you give me any of the numbers or statistics that relate to this that will be meaningful to this audience?
Well, since we deal with this issue every single day, we just launched an annual survey that we are starting to really talk to the community about their perceptions and attitudes of long-term care. And we are just releasing our first survey. And what we have learned is 80% of individuals are very concerned about losing their independence and relying upon others for their care. And if you add in about their feelings regarding a loved one or a spouse, 60% are very concerned about losing independence regarding their spouse. And about 70% are very concerned about how to pay for long-term care. So some pretty big numbers.
Tim, where do you come in this conversation?
Well, I can add to the long-term care issue because I spent almost an entire chapter on what I call the boomer's perfect storm. And what that is, in a nutshell, is we've got 77 million boomers marching into retirement. They will live longer, and they will require more care for a longer period of time. The perfect storm part is that if you look at the enrollment and graduation rates for geriatric and primary care physicians, that number is getting smaller and smaller every year. So you have exploding demand and declining supply, and it's another critical reason why families, not just the parents, but the families have to begin planning for that situation.
I think I saw a number somewhere along the line indicating that 70%, I think it was, of people over the age of 65 will at some point require long-term care.
I'm sure that's true, and I'll give you another a number that it's in the 70s. I've done literally hundreds of interviews with baby boomers about their relationship with their family, and all families are different, so every story is different, but they all seem to come down to the same refrain, if you will, and that's, I'll never put my kids through what just happened to me with my parents. But unfortunately, 75%, according to AARP, will never, ever talk to their kids about the decisions and issues and challenges that they as a family are going to face. And 70% of adult children will never discuss aging issues with their parents.
Mary Lynn, why aren't these discussions being held? And I'll come back to you, Tim, because I know this is what your book is about, but let me start with Mary Lynn.
Well, I think it's an emotionally charged issue because you're talking about the end of life. Even though it may be decades away, just having those discussions can be very scary, both for the adult child to be thinking about those issues as well as the senior thinking about that for themselves as well as their wife. And I think one of the key things that we encourage families over and over, and that's why we're so glad that Tim is here today on the show, but also going to be talking at our conference, is we really need to instill a sense of urgency for families to plan and prepare for that whole new set of challenges when parents enter that last decade. And also those baby boomers, you know, they really need to take those proactive approaches to those decisions and actions that they need to think through for those last chapters of life. And yet, in our survey analysis that I shared with you earlier, less than half of the people who took that survey have taken any steps at all to research or gather information. And even fewer, like Tim said, have let their family know of their preferences, and only about 20% have either set aside money for long-term care or purchased long-term care insurance.
Tim, when should this conversation be held? I mean, no one knows when that last decade begins. So I assume you want to get that done early.
Exactly. I usually say do it this afternoon, and I really mean that. The way I set the book up was, on the one side, much as Mary Lynn has talked about, there's the emotional barriers, and then on the other side is the tactical issues. Just to kind of feed off a little bit on what Mary Lynn said, if you don't get past the emotional barriers, you're never going to get to the tactics. And so I think it's really important that you begin with the emotional barriers, that, you know, it's denial of your physical deterioration, denial of maybe a financial decline, denial of that last sentence, the end. It's the role reversal issues, that point in life when you can no longer take care of yourself, when you become the child and your child becomes the parent. I think maybe the biggest issue, and Merlin has touched on this too, is the fear of loss of control. And that's to me, one of the most critical issues that we face, and one of the things I spent a lot of time on in the book. What I encourage people to do is sit down and begin to plan this other talk as soon as possible, because once you do that, it's not about you're losing control or your kids taking control. It becomes an issue of sharing control. And if you can get to that point of sharing control, it goes so much easier, and typically, most families wait until a crisis hits, then you're not going to be sharing control. You're going to be arguing.
Now, Tim, who should launch the conversation? Should it be the parent? Should it be the kids?
Well, it can be both, but the reason I wrote the book to and for the parents is because it struck me that if you go into a bookstore or look at Amazon, there's hundreds and hundreds of books out there written for the adult child on how to take care of their drooling incompetent parents. There's not one book written for the parent. And so what I felt was, if I can encourage the parent to take the initiative while they're still able to run the conversation, if you will, or at least lead it, that would empower the kids and it would empower them, and then it becomes not a confrontation but a collaboration.
Mary Lynn, what should be included in the planning?
Well, I just would like to emphasize one of the things that Tim said, because, you know, we offer, it's a Voice Connect helpline for families and individuals in the greater St. Louis area to call us to begin talking about these issues and talking about their planning for long-term care and to learn what their options are. And I would say about 95% of our phone calls are from people that are in crisis. They're typically not planning. And like Tim said, you know, when you are in a crisis situation, and let's say that you've had a loved one that's been rushed to the hospital and they're ready to be discharged, and then that's the first time that you realize, oh my gosh, I can't take care of this person myself and they can no longer live independently, then all of a sudden you have this crisis that ensues about what to do. And usually that family, because they haven't been thinking about it, they're really unprepared. And the whole long-term care continuum is pretty complex, and you really need expert help and a coach to walk you through it, because it's very expensive, and there are a lot of benefits that may be available to pay for it, but typically that family is not, you know, been spending the time to learn about that. So we help those families walk through that crisis, but boy, oh boy, you would really make so much of a better series of decisions had you been planning that, you know, way in advance. Because when it's last minute, your options are pretty limited on what you can and cannot do.
But what we're talking about in terms of what you need to plan for, we're talking about final directives, what to do if you become totally incapacitated. We're talking about whether you want nursing home, assisted living, hospice, living at home. These are the kinds of things you've got to work out.
Absolutely. And one is the advanced directives. And that is very, very critical for you to pull together with an attorney the paperwork that you need to decide who would make decisions for you if you become incapacitated. In the state of Missouri, there is no law in place that dictates who that will be if you do not have that durable power of attorney in place. So you end up becoming in limbo, and literally nobody is available or able to legally make decisions on your behalf. We're only one of five states in the country that does not have this legislation in place. So important to think about that and get that paperwork done.
We have an email here, and Tim, I'll send this question your way. It's Paul Crombie emailed, anticipating what was to be my next question.
Okay.
How do you know when to acquire long-term care insurance? Too early, you pay too long, too late, premiums very, very high. And there's a lot of fine print in these policies.
Exactly. One rule of thumb that I have heard is, and this is from the insurance industry, is you should probably start doing it in your 50s, but if your asset base is below $200,000 or above $2 million, you may want to think about it again. If you're under $200,000, you're probably going to go on Medicaid. And if you're over $2 million, you probably don't need it. Let me add to that, to the points that that you're raising and also Mary Lynn raised. There's some other issues I think you need to back up from the advanced directives and even wills. And that's, I think, one of the things you need to start with is financing your uncertain future. I mean, you don't really know where the end zone is. You don't know when or where or how you're going to end up, and you don't know how much it's going to cost. It's unknowable in a sense, but what you need to do is sit down with your kids and your financial advisors and begin to develop what-if scenarios.
Well, what if there are no kids?
Well, that's a good question, and it comes up every time I speak to a group. You hopefully will have a support group around you when you need it at the end. And that could be siblings, it could be neighbors, it could be people from your church or your synagogue. Or, it could be lots of different kinds of people. So those aren't your kids, but they're still going to be there to help you. And I would suggest, and I have said this to the groups that I talk to, if you can isolate who those people are going to be, sit down with them and have the other talk.
Right. Anything to add to that, Marianne?
Well, I would just add, you want to have those discussions when there's no crisis, because then the emotions are not there. You know, when people have a lot of emotions, that's when the decision-making is not as thorough and thoughtful going forward. So the time to have those discussions when everybody is healthy and feeling good and kind of just imagining the future and letting adult children know what seniors want, and do they want to try to stay in their home as long as possible? Do they want to consider transitioning to an independent living community that also has assisted living on site and also has skilled nursing on site, because there's a lot of advantages of being in a community setting. So all those kinds of discussions, you know, need to be talked about when everybody's healthy and feeling in a stable situation. And that's one of the reasons that we have this conference coming up on Friday, because this is overwhelming. This is very difficult to have these discussions in isolation. So that's why we have Tim, you know, who's written a book and is an expert in this, coming to talk to the community and having that discussion about what is all entailed with planning for long-term care. And then we combine that with a number of presentations by our own staff who are experts in the options and services that are available in St. Louis. So when you end up leaving that conference, you don't have all the answers for sure, but you certainly have begun some really thorough discussions about what to think about. And it sure would be great if at the conference we had not only the seniors, but also the adult children come to have those discussions.
Let me just point out that the conference is being held this Friday at the Renaissance St. Louis Airport Hotel from 7:30 in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening. Anyone is invited to come, Mary Lynn, correct?
Yes, just go on our website and register, and that's the VOYCESTL.org.
And we will have a link to that on our website at STLPublicRadio.org. Tim, let me come back to you. We've kind of worked around the issue of cost. Many of the things we've talked about are very expensive. You mentioned Medicaid, and that is in a category by itself. But I suspect a lot of people look ahead and think, what the heck, I'll have Medicare, and I'll be fine. What do you tell them?
Exactly. Well, I go back to the point I made about the boomer's perfect storm. Just because you have great insurance doesn't mean you're going to get you will have access to great medical care. Because it's going to be a supply and demand issue, and that's one reason why you need to really plan for this. Another thing I'll point out is setting realistic expectations. TIA Kreft did a study not too long ago with people who were entering or about to enter retirement, and they asked them, do you expect your spending in retirement to decrease, stay the same, or increase? And their perception was 56% said it will decrease, 36 said it would stay the same, and only 8 said it would increase. Their reality is just the opposite. 36% will decrease, 47% will increase or stay the same, and 22% will increase. So the point I'm trying to make is it's not just a matter of cost. It's also being realistic about what you've got to deal with and how you're going to do it. One of the other things that I suggest in terms of planning ahead is plan your this isn't just about end of life as far as I'm concerned. I think it's about the rest of your life and the time you're going to be spending with your family, but also what you're going to do with your spouse. So in my case, my wife Pam and I have decided in our 60s we're going to do active travel. So we're going to, you know, hike up to the Machu Picchu. In our 70s, we're going to do probably travel in the country. In our 80s, we'll probably do museums and theater. In our 90s, we'll do extreme bingo. I don't know what we're going to do then, but the point is you don't want to wait until your 90s until you decide to go to Machu Picchu.
No, and you might start that extreme bingo a little bit earlier as well.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you'll be able to pay for your trip.
True. I have an email here from Karen, I think, that makes all of your points very well. And she brings up something else. I know firsthand how trying to make these decisions too late can tear a family apart. Due to sibling rivalry and the need for control, my father completely lost control of the last 5 years of his life. I'm 45, plan to hire a lawyer to establish and enforce my wishes. It takes the burden off the kids and makes sure your desires are carried out. The sibling rivalry issue is certainly one that must come into play more often than not.
It's huge, and that's exactly what happened in my family. My folks' attitude was everything will be just fine, so we don't need to talk about it, and we never did. And we paid the price physically and psychologically and financially because of that. I mean, when you don't do this, you've got all these arguments and misunderstandings and hurt feelings and sibling rivalries, and in my case, your family will explode. It's destroyed.
Mary Lynn,
and you really don't want that to happen.
No, of course not. This, I guess, falls under the broad category of estate planning, does it not? And I'd like to talk about that for a moment. We mentioned it briefly off the air. It's expensive to go through this process, but it's a lot more expensive if you don't. Explain what I'm talking about.
Well, because if you don't have a will in place, then you have to go through the court system through probate. And that is fraught with a lot of high fees and a very long time period that you do not have access to assets. So that's definitely not a way to remain in control. So you and I think it's a great first step to put your will in place and your estate planning. It's kind of like the first step in all of this. And it gets you off to other discussions about other aspects of long-term care.
Tim, a lot of people think a will is really all you need.
Well, they're wrong because there's a lot of other issues. If you really are talking about the rest of your life, not the end of your life, there's a lot of other things to do. One of the biggest, and it has to do with wills, I get a lot of pushback from people when I say the first step in this process is full disclosure, committing yourself to full disclosure with your kids. Tell them everything you've got, including your will. I have an uncle who had two kids. One, his daughter was in social work, and his son had done very well in financial planning, financial markets. He decided to give his daughter, who didn't make much money but had a good life, he was going to give her twice as much as he was going to give the son. Where he was smart was he sat them down and not only told them what was going to happen, but why. And when you do that, then it becomes more of a collaboration, or at least they understand why it was decided that way. If you wait until you're gone and then you're spending, you know, thousands of dollars like Mary Lynn's talking about on, you know, court and all and lawyers and all that kind of stuff, not only are you going to spend a lot of money, you're probably going to destroy a family.
Right. We've only got about a minute left, and I have a quick note here saying my grandparents started talking about what they wanted their funerals to be like. This conversation came at the dinner table, and the writer wants to know, is that appropriate, normal, to have that kind of a conversation over, you know, macaroni and cheese?
I think that's a perfect place. I mean, I think what you really want to do is to have these conversations when everybody's together. And when you're maybe in a comfortable setting. And, you know, one of the things that I've heard from readers, I didn't come up with this, but it's called the third-party transaction. And it's like, if you said to me, Tim, I'm the son, you're the dad, say, Tim, we gotta have this conversation. Often what happens is the barriers go up and the confrontation begins and you don't have that conversation. If instead you say, Tim, why don't you look at this other content or this other talk concept, and when you're done, let you and I sit together and talk about it. It becomes a collaboration.
Right.
You may want to try that.
Yeah, Mary Lynn, a minute left. What sort of services does your organization provide?
Well, the individual who sent you an email about family turmoil is what we deal with every day. We are the specialists in working with families and individuals to think about planning and planning for all of your options for long-term care. And we are a completely free resource. So I would hate for the community to not be able to take advantage of some free resources with some real experts in long-term care that can work with you, you know, one phone call or 20 phone calls or meet with you in person to work with you. And also, once you actually have somebody who you've...
I've got to stop you there. We'll put all of this information on our website. Our time is up and I have to leave it. Mary Lynn Fonda Donovan, thank you so much for being with us. Tim Proch, thank you for being with us. The event is the 21st Century. Let's say at the Renaissance Hotel at the airport on Friday. Starts early. Thank you so much for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.